Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
I almost decided to do the entire show today with a mask on, but I decided not to. It's just me in here by the studio, by myself, Seth on the other side of the glass, socially distanced, not on the other side of the glass. Everything's groovy there. And on Facebook Live, hi, everybody. Now, for some reason, we don't have sound. Everything's looking better. Lighting's getting better. Camera's getting better. People are like, no sound, no sound. It's always something. One of these days we're going to get to where it's not anything. So is it something on the board in there, Seth? Is it something on Wirecast? What is it? I don't know. I'm not going to worry about it right now because I've got a lot to do. So all kinds of things going on out there. And we are going to go through a bunch of different stories here. So we got University of Georgia students. It's amazing how much money you can pay to end up ignorant or stupid. Or dumb, or uninformed, or whatever adjective you'd like to throw in there. So that's, I want to go to that. I can't teach when I'm dead, so they held a die-in. Isn't that funny? Yes and no, perhaps, but they held a die-in in University of Georgia. So I'm going to talk about that, but several COVID things. So they're talking about a die-in because they go back to school, they're going to die. Even though that has no basis in reality whatsoever, so I'm going to continue to talk about things that have a basis in reality, things that are true. Even though the mainstream media doesn't want you to know it, a lot of different sources don't want you to know it, but I want you to know it. So we're going to look at that story. Then we're going to look at actual hard data. Okay, hard data. Shocking. Hard data. And then some applications of that hard data. And then we're going to talk about the things that actually are killing young people. And we'll talk about things that are killing people in record numbers around the country. And then we'll look, I kind of glossed over this the other day, what was going on in Sweden. But it's an amazing example. We'll see if it holds true because they could have a surge coming back. But right now, Sweden's looking awesome and they haven't lived anything like we have. And then a good thing that President Trump did. And then I'll finish with this a gaffe number 4,567 from Joe Biden towards the end of the show. That's one of those things you got to hear to believe. And it's just getting sad. I wonder at what point at what point is anybody going to go, okay, let's actually get sober minded here and realize that we have a guy, a senile old guy that's been in government since pretty much government was created. And he's actually the Democrat nominee. It's crazy. All right. So we'll get to that. Okay. So a lot to do today. I can't teach when I'm dead. University of Georgia. Okay. This isn't just them, by the way. This just happened at University of North Carolina, a little bit closer to where I live. But let's look at this one. Dozens of students, faculty, and staff sprawled across. Let's see if we can pull that picture up on the TV in here, Seth. Sprawled across the University of Georgia campus Thursday afternoon, playing dead to protest the university's reopening plans as the threat of COVID-19 still looms large, larger than it did when schools first closed during the spring semester. Cardboard and paper signs rested on their bodies, some depicting gravestones, others declaring, "I can't teach when I'm dead." How many will UGA, University of Georgia, let die? Or, when I said I was dying to get back to my classroom, I didn't mean it literally. In-person classes are scheduled to resume August 20th at the Athens, Georgia University. Praise the Lord. Good for you guys. But many staff and students are at odds with the school and the university system of Georgia, according to an open letter. Masks are required on campus, but that's not enough, according to the United Campus Workers of Georgia, the group that organized the protest. Protesters staged a die-in over face-to-face teaching at UNC Chapel Hill on Wednesday earlier this week. Some expressed worry the return of UNC students could put the rest of the town at risk. Quote, if people are so afraid to be around the students, then don't go near the university. How dare the county commissioner, Cherry Penny Rich, said that. What a heartless person. I know it's difficult in some instances, she said, but the university is going to open. The students are here, so we have to move past the fight of trying to keep them not to open. We have to move past that and work with them to try to keep it safe. Parents and educators demonstrated outside of a Little Rock, Arkansas elementary school Tuesday. McClatchy News reported, and planted faux gravestones. That's great. As if our little kids aren't freaked out and messed up enough, let's go put some faux gravestones out in front of their elementary school. Who are these idiots? I mean, God bless them and God help them. But you are, this is so irresponsible and so unloving that we're doing this to our kids. Opening up schools and sending over 400,000 students into buildings is absurd. It's absurd, parent Veronica McLean said. No, ma'am. What is absurd is your fear. So let me turn the corner from fear and media hype and government overreach and just an overall spirit of fear over the country to actual facts and figures. Okay? So I'm sorry if this offends you, but like Ben Shapiro says, facts don't care about your feelings. I do, for the most part, but facts don't. So the CDC actually putting some information out here. Okay, so I'm going to take you through some of these numbers, then I'll kind of coalesce them and do an overview, and then we'll do some application. Okay, we're looking at reality, the CDC. If we want to bow down before that all great, powerful, all-knowing force known as the CDC, then let's use their numbers. So this is nationwide through August 1st, COVID. Okay, now these are people that have died with COVID, not necessarily of COVID. Remember that caveat is out there. So you get into a car crash and you die and they test you, your body, and you're COVID positive, then they count that as a COVID death. Remember that? So the COVID death numbers are at the very maximum because they're inflated by some of this craziness. So under 1 year of age, deaths with COVID, 15 out of the population nationwide is 4.1 to 8 million. Okay, that's 1.2% of the entire population. 1 to 4 years of age, 10 deaths, all sad, right? But 10 out of 16 million. 5 to 14 years of age, there's 20 of those that have died out of 41 million. 15 to 24 years of age, 225 have died out of 43 million. So that's 245, 255, 270 between 1 year of age and 24 years of age. 270 out of the entire population nationwide of that same age group, which is about 94, 95, it's about 104 million people are 24 and under in the United States, of which 270 have died. Okay? So that comes up with like 0.000003% chance of death. Then we're going to move up. When we come back, we're going to talk about 25 to 54. I'm in the top part of that. Then we're going to get into the danger zone, 55 to 74, and then the real danger zone, 74 to 85 plus. We're going to look at facts, then we're going to apply those to reality so that I can tell you kids aren't dying from COVID. So they should be back in school. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
So what are we waiting for?
Welcome back to Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, breaking down some truth, breaking down some facts, even from the CDC. Remember that CDC graphic that we can throw up, the CDC, CDC, CDC. So we're going right to the source, right? I mean, we all believe the CDC. How can you not? So we were going through these numbers, and out of about 100 million people aged 24 and under in America, 270 of them have died with COVID. Okay, not necessarily of COVID, but with COVID. Then we have the next age range, 25 to 54. Okay, 25 to 34, a little over 1,000 deaths. That's horrible, right? That's sad. Out of 46, about 47 million. From 35 to 44 years of age, 2,700 have died. That's horrible, but out of 42 million, so not a really high percentage chance. And then 45 to 54, about 7,300 have died. That's horrible. But it's out of 40.8 million. Okay. Now we're going to start getting into more of the danger zone here. Seriously. Because when you look at the graphs and you look at the numbers, it goes like this. It's like 0 to 24 years of age. And then it starts to come up a little bit. And then when you get to the 55 and especially the 75, then it hockey sticks and goes up. Okay. Because this is highly concentrated in our older population. 55 to 64, there's 17,583 deaths as of August 1st. That's terrible, heartbreaking, obviously, out of 43 million. 65 to 74, 29,000 deaths out of 33 million in that age group. 75 to 84, almost 38,000 deaths out of 16 million. So the percentages are going up radically here. In 85 years and over, 45,845 of our 142,000 deaths are with people 85 years of age and over out of a population of just 6.7 million. So you have this huge scale that changes as you get to the age. Okay, so just to kind of break it down in general, 54 and younger, 70% of the U.S. population, but only 8% of COVID-19 deaths. 8%, 54 and under, and they're 70% of the U.S. population, and they make up only 8% of COVID deaths, okay? 75 and older are just 7% of the U.S. population, but 59% of the COVID deaths. 85 and older are just 2% of the population, but one-third of all COVID-19 deaths. So it skews to the upper age, big time and heartbreakingly. Okay, the median age of COVID-19 death right now in America is about 78, which happens to be about the average U.S. life expectancy. Keep in mind, these are all coded as death with, not from COVID. Doesn't even deal with comorbidity, which means like somebody with a heart disease that tested positive for COVID-19 could be counted. Someone that died in a motor vehicle accident that was positive for COVID-19 could be counted. So let's do some practical application. I saw some pictures. I put some pictures up on Facebook earlier. So if you follow the Facebook page for the Steve Noble Show, you'll see this stuff. So somebody did these in the graphics. These are from the Centers for Disease Control and the Industrial Information Association. Okay. Insurance Information Association. So are you between the ages of 20 and 40? Your chances of dying of COVID-19 are the same as dying while playing football. These are based on actual hard numbers. Okay. If you're between the ages of 15 and 24, you have a better chance of dying from falling down the stairs than dying of COVID-19. These are from CDC numbers and the Insurance Information Association, okay? Kids under 15. These are all our students that we're freaking out about, right? Kids under 15 have a better chance of getting hit by lightning than dying of COVID-19. So when we have thunderstorms, why don't we cancel school? By the way, thunderstorms, chance of lightning today. So all kids must stay home because you might die, even though we know the odds of dying from a lightning strike are incredibly small, almost statistically zero for kids under 15 with COVID. Dying of COVID, almost statistically zero. 15 and under, there have been 55 deaths or 45 deaths out of a total population of 61 million. Okay, that's reality. Okay, that's not hype. That's not Trump. That's not the CDC. That's reality. And we're losing our minds and doing die-ins in front of college campuses. I put this on Facebook earlier today as well. Isn't it amazing how much money you can spend on a college education and still end up ignorant? Because these college students just have next to 0% chance of dying. Could they get sick? Yes. Could some of them get seriously ill? Yes. Have a few died? Yes. But out of a total student population between kindergarten and the end of college of about 76 million, there were 270 deaths associated with COVID-19 in the U.S. Okay? So that's the COVID isn't the problem. That's not the problem for our youth. We're missing all the real problems. Here's another story. This is just heartbreaking. More youths are dying of suicide and overdose than COVID-19 during the pandemic. Also from the CDC. Okay? Suicide and drug overdoses. This is from the Christian Post. Suicide and drug overdoses are killing more young people than COVID-19 as the two pre-existing epidemics have been exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Robert Redfield warns. So go all the way back, and Trump was right. Our solution, our response to COVID can't be worse than COVID itself. And it is in terms of real human costs. And I've got a couple other stories to talk about on this one. But for our kids, for young people, we're seeing, sadly, far greater suicides now than we are deaths from COVID, Redfield explained. This is the head of the CDC. We're seeing far greater deaths from drug overdoses than are above the excess we had had as background than we're seeing the deaths from COVID-19. A June survey from the Addiction Policy Forum reported a 20% increase in substance abuse, with 34% of respondents experiencing a change in their treatment and recovery due to the pandemic. The American Medical Association also voiced concern in a July 20th report, stating that over 35 states have reported increases in opioid-related mortality, as well as ongoing concerns for those with a mental illness or substance use disorder. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among people ages 10 to 34 in the United States, second only to unintentional injury, according to the CDC. Suicide took the lives of nearly 15,000 people within that age bracket in 2018 alone. Last year, the Public Health Institute reported that the suicide rate for kids 10 to 14. This is, God help us. Suicide rates for, and now we're freaking out about everything. Can't go to school, wear the mask. We're just scaring them even more. And this is loving? This is good biblical parenting? This is sowing fear into them, sowing distrust. Reported that the suicide rates for kids 10 to 14 has nearly tripled in the last decade, while the suicide rates among older teenagers has increased by 76%. Then you take that. It was bad enough as it is. And then we do the COVID-19 shutdown. And so we got teachers and teachers unions and people like, I don't know, school boards and Wake County commissioners and other county commissions and stuff like, and governors like Cooper here in North Carolina that are saying, we're trying to protect the kids. We're trying to protect the kids. No, you're not. Your politicization of this whole process is killing kids. But why would I expect any different from a lot of these people? Because they look the other way. They don't care. They protect and they fund abortion. Oh, Steve, of course you're going to bring up abortion, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, of course I am. Morality applies across the board. Truth applies across the board. And if you're going to lecture me about protecting kids in school while you protect Planned Parenthood for killing kids because that's an essential business down the street and you want to protect kids, you're not even doing that. You're killing them. You're killing more of them. Let's sacrifice more to Molech. And you wonder why America is in the tank? Do you really think just because we put God bless America on our currency that he can or he will? Goodness gracious. I'm going to take a break, and then I'll be right back. This is Steve Noble. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you there on your radio listening device, whatever the case may be. If you don't happen to get the show, if you can't be with us live every day, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Truth Radio Network and several other pastors and brothers in Christ around the state here in North Carolina and a few other states that carry the show, and we praise the Lord for that. But also, you could be right here in the studio with me. Just go to Facebook and jump in on Facebook Live, the Steve Noble Show there. I post a lot of stuff on Facebook. Because with our age group, we're there. Only 20% of Americans even deal with Twitter. So I'm not doing a whole lot of stuff on Twitter. Our age group and stuff is pretty much on Facebook. So I do a lot of posting on Facebook, a lot of interaction there. I gather a lot of information on Facebook. I'll ask provocative questions on Facebook. But if you really want to know what I think, this is my venue for that, is Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern. But also the show is podcast. So you can catch the show, any of the past shows we've been doing. I've been doing radio since 2007. So there's podcast stuff going back probably 5 and 6 years. So you can do that. You can actually search those on our website, thestevenobleshow.com, or just wherever you get your podcasts. And if you missed the show, why don't you just check out, hey, what was the show about? What's the title? What's some of the content? And listen to it when you can. Most of us don't live based on live schedules anymore. I get what I want, when I want it, from where I want. That's how we live now. So you can check all that out. Plus, who is this SOB, the brand new podcast that we started? That's to reach people that definitely aren't listening to Christian radio. And I was just saying on Facebook Live, did an hour and a half episode with our oldest son, Hayden, who's 25. Grew up in a very conservative home, obviously, but is kind of left of center in a lot of his politics. Not all of it, but some of it. And some of the things we like butt heads on big time. So we've had struggles, and I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. And if you'd like to be blessed and encouraged and maybe equipped a little on how to deal with that in your own context, go listen to that. Okay, who is this? SOB.com or all the different major podcast platforms, you can find it there. Back to this thing, talking about more youth are dying of suicide and overdose and COVID-19. This was all coming off of these college students and teachers starting at University of Georgia and others that are like playing dead out in front of the administration buildings because, you know, you send us back to school, we're all going to die. Although the numbers and the facts and reality don't match that. Again, as of right now, 270 Americans between the ages of 1 and 24 have died from COVID-19. That's out of a student population of about 76 million. And that's why I've seen you got a better chance of falling down the stairs and dying than dying from COVID if you're beneath the age of 50, right? So we started talking about that. Here's the real problem. And all of our liberal leaders that are keeping kids away from school and all that stuff are adding to it. So this is, again, the head of the CDC. You know, a lot of kids get their mental health services, over 7 million in school. Well, that assumes they're there. A lot of people get food and nutrition in schools. Schools are really important in terms of mandatory reporting of sexual and child abuse. Obviously, socialization is important. Redfield said that the cost to our nation in continuing to keep these schools closed is substantial. That doesn't matter to most Democrat governors like ours here in North Carolina. Governor Cooper doesn't care about the kids. Obviously, he's pro-abortion. See, it's totally consistent here. If you're stuck in an elderly care place, and we, like Governor Cuomo, we light the city up in pink, literally lit the World Trade Center, the One World Trade Center up in pink when they signed an abortion law a year ago saying you can abort your child right up to the moment of delivery. Okay, that is satanic to the core. And they cheered and they lit the town up pink. The same people, the same leadership, then sent COVID sick people back into nursing homes. So if you're incapable of defending yourself, if you don't have a voice, if you can't come out and march, if you can't protest, then we'll just let you die or we'll kill you. That's how we operate in the United States of America. That's just the facts. And again, so part of me looks at In God We Trust on our coinage and stuff, and I go, are you kidding me? We think because we throw his name on our coins, you can expect his blessings? Good luck with that. You just can't. Here's another one. Some more things coming out of COVID because of the way our government has handled it. Homicide spike hits most large U.S. cities. This is Wall Street Journal the other day. A sharp rise in homicides this year is hitting large U.S. cities during the coronavirus pandemic and amid recession and a national backlash against police tactics. The murder rate is still low compared to the previous decades and other types of serious crimes have dropped, but researchers, police, and some residents fear the homicide spike, if not tamed, could threaten an urban renaissance. No kidding. A Wall Street Journal analysis of crime statistics among the nation's 50 largest cities found that reported homicides were up 24% so far this year. 24%. Police, researchers, mayors, and community leaders see a confluence of forces at work in the homicide spike. Institutions that keep city communities safe have been destabilized by lockdown and protests against police. Lockdowns and recession also means tensions are running high and streets have been emptied of eyes and ears on their communities. Some attribute the rise to an increase in gang violence. Some cities with long-running crime problems saw their numbers rise, including Philly, Detroit, Memphis, Tennessee, Chicago. The worst hit has tallied more than one of every eight homicides. Less violent places have been struck as well, such as Omaha, Nebraska, and Phoenix. In all, 36 of the 50 cities studied saw homicide rates at double-digit rates, representing all regions of the country. You go back towards the end of this article, and there's this from New York. New York, Detroit, and Fresno officers all said the easing of bail requirements in their states likely returned some dangerous criminals to the streets. So you can go ballistic in New York City downtown, break stuff, throw stuff at the cops, they throw you in jail, there's no bail, you get out. Right back on the streets to do what? More terrorism. So Mayor de Blasio has acknowledged police concerns about the new restrictions on police tactics, but in July said, I believe we can make it work. God help you, sir. You're an idiot. I believe we can make it work. No, you can't. Obviously. You want to go out on Fifth Avenue and paint Black Lives Matter on the street while people are getting shot and killed all over the place. You took 600 cops out of the violent crimes division, the undercover cops, and you're going to have more and more blood on your hands. But what does he care? He's in New York where they butcher kids right and left at Planned Parenthood clinics. See, they're perfectly consistent. Do you see it? Do you see it? Please, Lord, save de Blasio and other people like him that are so lost and confused and darkened in their sin. And they're like puppets of Satan himself. While some of them claim Catholicism. Like Cuomo, the next time he walks into a Catholic church to receive communion, he should probably spontaneously combust. It's okay to abort up until the moment of delivery? God bless America. That's no shock. Earlier this year, he said, hey, when their COVID numbers are coming down, hey, God didn't do this. Prayers didn't do this. We did this. We did it. Autonomy, idolatry, lostness. So what's happening where they didn't act like this? Well, let's look at Sweden. After 6 months without lockdown, I kind of glossed over this the other day. Sweden's COVID-19 deaths, infections, bottom out. Whoa, how'd that happen? I thought they were just hated everybody in Sweden. They're so irresponsible. After months without lockdown, school closures, and other mitigation measures widely imposed across the world, Sweden's coronavirus cases and deaths have fallen to such minimal levels as to revive the debate over so-called herd immunity strategy. Imagine that, because that's the way God designed it. Shh, don't tell anybody I said that. And the dramatic drop in new cases and deaths in that country pointed to a rapidly improving situation there in defiance of many earlier predictions. The so-called Swedish model has for months drawn alarm and derision from countless world health authorities. Many have insisted that sweeping open-ended restrictions on social and economic activity, including lockdowns, strict social distancing measures, and mandatory face mask orders, are the only practical methods by which the coronavirus can be halted. So why is it so successful in Sweden? Though there is relatively little evidence to support such measures, many governments, particularly those in Western Europe and the U.S., have for several months imposed such orders on their respective citizens, with numerous European heads of state and U.S. governors indicating that these measures may remain in place until an effective vaccine is developed, because ultimately the people on the left, the Trump derangement syndrome folks, of which there's many, they don't really care about people. They don't care about the economy. They don't care about children. They don't really care about the elderly. They care about one thing. Getting rid of Trump. It's crazy. That's why there's just spiritual darkness everywhere. There just is. Sweden largely eschewed such policies. According to the World Health Organization, Sweden's daily deaths peaked in late April at 185 and have been declining ever since. On some recent days, the country has recorded as few as 9 deaths. Sweden. Tegnell and others have argued that lockdowns, the head epidemiologist over there, have argued that lockdown countries have significantly lower immunity levels than Sweden's, and that those countries may have to lock down again in the fall if and when the disease returns. Many experts have claimed that COVID-19, like some other respiratory diseases, will only be subject to the effects of herd immunity when anywhere from 60 to 80% of the population recovers from it. Reaching those levels, it is argued, would require unacceptable levels of death. Well, not if we didn't bring an atom bomb to a knife fight, gang. If we had been focusing on the vulnerable, but we don't care about the vulnerable in America. Haven't you figured that out yet? You can also take that into the urban centers and the poor. We don't really care about them either. Oh, you can go after their vote and you can promise all that stuff, Democrats, and say you're for the little guy and for the black guy and the Hispanic guy, but results speak way bigger than your platitudes. Boy, I'm kind of on today. Yet there are indications that the herd immunity threshold for the coronavirus may be much lower than that, you know, which could explain what's going on in Sweden, because your body was made to encounter all kinds of things if you're decently healthy. And then you beat it. Thank you, Lord. Then you become immune. Thank you, Lord. And then more and more people get there. And then sooner or later, the virus has nowhere to go. Wow. It's almost like it was designed to work that way, except for the vulnerable, but we don't care about them. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today. Feeling a little exercised, frustrated, angry, passionate, broken. Listen, if you're newer to the show or watching on Facebook Live and you don't know me very well, listen, it's one thing, like when I'm in here doing the show, and it's mostly a monologue. Some days I take phone calls, not all the time. But when it's mostly a monologue and I'm very anti-apathy. We've had a lot of apathy in the Christian church, and we just tend to take it and we'll wait till Jesus comes back. But we should be heartbroken and engaged in the here and the now, because Jesus was all about the kingdom and he was all about your eternal future, but he was also ministering to people where they were at the time. Thus the healing, which was also showing people his power. But he also made a very big point. Like I just started, I'm in, at the end of chapter 4 in the book of John. So if you want to get my daily devotionals, which I'm writing every morning now, so Monday through Friday, then they go out at about 10:55 a.m. Eastern time. We're in the book of John. I'll probably write 150 to 160 devotionals in the book of John. We're right at the end of chapter 4. So if you go to the website, thestevenobleshow.com, you'll see it at the top. You can sign up for the daily dose is what it's called. Or if you're using your cell phone, just text the word dose, D-O-S-E, to 66866. Now, we should all know what that means by now, right? If you don't, ask a child or a grandchild. But text the word dose, like that's the message, D-O-S-E, to, instead of your friend, your husband, your wife, your buddy, whatever, to 66866. And if you text the word dose to 66866, you'll get on the email list. You'll start getting the daily dose. So we're at the end of the book of John chapter 4, where Jesus is, he had a nobleman come from another city. He walked about 20 miles. They asked Jesus to heal his son. And Jesus is like, you guys are all always looking for a sign. But then the guy asked again, and Jesus said, you know, basically, go on home. Your son's healed. And the guy who hightailed it up there took his time going home. Because he asked his servants when he got there, they're like, hey, your son's fine. And he's like, when did that happen yesterday? So he got there fast, but he took his time. He ran to get to Jesus. He walked home because of his faith, because he believed what Jesus said. He didn't need to see the miracles. He walked home in faith. And so that's what we have to have. We have to have faith, but you also engage. So Jesus, yes, he would heal people. He fed people their current needs, which we're surrounded by. So Catherine on Facebook Live was like, hey, listen, what do we do about this stuff too? I mean, anybody can get on the radio, I suppose, or jump on Facebook Live, social media. This is what we do. You get on there and you whine and you moan and you complain and you get angry and we throw bumper stickers across the aisle at each other. But what do we do about it? Well, number one, you pray. Number two, you engage. Could be local politics, homeschooling, if you don't like the public school system. And by the way, if you don't even have kids in the school system, you engage anyway. Why? Because you're supposed to love your neighbors yourself. Maybe it's just calling a principal or writing or showing up at a school board meeting. Do something, but not the least of which would be pray. Pray for those in authority over us. Pray without ceasing. We did a Theology Thursday yesterday on pray. We need to be praying. I think if more of us were on our knees crying out, we'd see more happen. We say we're so broken about stuff. Well, how broken? Are you broken enough to pray about it? How concerned are you about the government, about the country, about Trump, about anything? Well, let's go. How much time do we have on our knees in prayer? And that's probably the weakest part of my walk. I have a little sign in here on my bookcase. It says, talk less, pray more. That's a joke. That's kind of a joke to me because I kind of talk for a living. And man, if I prayed as much as I talked, look out, man, I would see the power of God falling all over my life. And so, Steve, why don't you? Well, that's a great question. That's perhaps because maybe I really don't believe in the power of prayer. Do you? We should. All right, I'm going to jump off that. So anyway, engage, not the least of which is pray. Have conversations, challenge people, get information, but watch your witness. The country doesn't last forever. Politics don't last forever. Trump doesn't last forever. Human souls do. That should be our ultimate concern. And as the world darkens and we lose a moral compass, the gospel is a moral solution to a moral problem. So you live in a country where morality goes out the door. People stop worrying about moral things, which means they don't think they're in bad shape because the whole place is a slime ball fest. So I'm not that bad. I went to a protest. I care about black lives. I took a knee. I'm a good person. What do I need the gospel for? See that? See what happens? So the darker it gets, who's going to be the salt? Who's going to be the light? That's us. Okay, so positive Trump thing. So ultimately, the most important thing we can do, share the gospel, number one. Pray, number two. Engage, be salt and light, number three. And be a good representative of Christ in your sphere. Do what you can with the sphere that you have. You don't have mine, and I don't have yours. I can't reach your sphere. You can't reach mine. You have your place on the wall. I have my place on the wall. God's only going to hold you responsible for the people that you can actually get to. Love them well. Engage. Slow to speak. Quick to listen. Slow to anger. President Trump names pro-life leaders to panel investigating aborted baby parts. Good job, Mr. President. The Trump administration established the National Institutes of Health Human Fetal Tissue Research Ethics Advisory Board earlier this year amid calls to end the unethical practice of using aborted baby body parts in taxpayer-funded research, which includes some vaccines, by the way. The scientists reported President Donald Trump appointed the 15 board members, and at least 10 of them are pro-life. The board met for the first time July 31st. So for whatever reason, they also had some people on there that aren't pro-life, which I personally have a problem with. The new ethics board is made up of 15 non-government employees, including doctors, scientists, ethicists, attorneys, and theologians. Mallory Quigley, a spokesperson for the Susan B. Anthony list, told the magazine that they expect the board is properly balanced. She pointed past expert panels on similar topics that have leaned heavily toward people in favor of abortion on demand and research that destroys embryos. So this is turning. And so that's good. What do you think is going to happen if Joe Biden wins? Oh, man. Fly a flag for the abortion mill. Protection, funding, enthusiasm, the whole nine. That's what you get. The Trump administration has been listening to pro-life advocates' pleas to stop using taxpayer funding for research using aborted baby body parts through the NIH. So they've made some progress there. Thank God for people like my friend Troy Newman, David DeLeiden. They were the ones with the Center for Medical Progress. Remember the undercover videos? Troy Newman got, they went after him big time. California went after him. They lost a federal lawsuit out in California. Planned Parenthood and those guys are trying to collect like $1.6 million. Troy is a good friend of mine, said, come on, come try to collect it. Praise the Lord for people like them. Remember all those Planned Parenthood expose videos? Should watch them again. Okay, let's play this clip from Joe Biden. Can you pull this up right quick? I want to play this clip from Joe Biden with his whole African-Americans, no diversity, Hispanics, lots of diversity. Did you hear about this one? You ready for that? I want to play this clip right quick, a quick comment, and then we'll be done, and then we can have hopefully a nice, peaceful weekend. Ready?
What you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
So let me see if I'm getting this right. Poor guy. I mean, part of me laughs. Part of me goes, this is total insanity. And part of me is just broken, like going, holy cow. What's he thinking? What's his wife thinking? What are the Democrats thinking? He's obviously losing it. He's like, what, 76? He should be hanging out in Boca Raton. He should be done. He should not be in this game. And by the way, this will be the most consequential vice presidential pick in our lifetime because they're going to be the president. If Joe Biden wins, whoever the vice president is going to be the president because the man is not fit for duty. I don't think he's fit for duty theologically. I don't think he's fit for duty philosophically. I certainly don't think he's fit for duty politically. But he is also not fit for duty emotionally, mentally, and physically. But did you hear? I mean, think about that. Essentially, what he said is all blacks are the same. They're homogeneous. Think the same. Act the same. No variation. Hispanic community, there's a lot of differences in there. Black community, no, they're all the same. Now, am I putting a spin on that? I don't think so. And Joe Biden has a history, which is so bizarre because he's got a history with some really racially insensitive statements going all the way back to his defense of segregation. He's got decades of this, okay? But yeah, I know Trump's the racist. But how does he get away with that? Because there's such a stranglehold by the Democrat Party on 93% of the African-American vote, because it doesn't matter what the party does, 93% of African-Americans on average, 94%, vote for the Democrat. Why? Nobody should be that allied with another human being or a party or a human philosophy. Nobody. So the question always comes back to, okay, you guys talk about caring for us a whole lot. What are you doing for us? What's actually happened? You Democrats have been pumping up the African-American community and the minority community for the last 50 years. Let's set the dialogue aside and let's actually talk about what you've accomplished. You go look at the demographics, you go look at the economic data, you look at the crime data in all these places where Democrats have been in charge for decades. And the whole thing's broken. My buddy, Pastor Wooden, Bishop Wooden, my slightly older brother from another mother, a couple years ago said, I think that every African-American in the country should re-register as an independent. And then we put a little sign on our front door that says, open for business. Come earn our vote. Which is what Donald Trump said in 2016. Remember that? He said, hey, to all my African-American friends out there, what the heck do you have to lose? Tell me what the Democrats have actually done for you in the last 40 or 50 years. Because it's only gotten worse. And by the way, they support Planned Parenthood, which disproportionately is butchering black babies. African Americans, you make up about 13% of the population. You make up 35 or 36% of all abortions, which is kind of what Margaret Sanger was after the whole time. And who's the number one protector of that practice? The party that 93 or 94% of you vote for. It's just heartbreaking. Please, Jesus, come back. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. Let's make sure we're praying and engaging, carrying our witness, share the gospel. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.